Computer, double espresso latte, extra cream, with cinnamon. Dinner in my pants. Spock, what in the devil was that?
I believe that we've been attacked.
By whom?
Captain, we are receiving a signal.
On screen. Khan.
I see you remembered me, old friend. Did you wet your pants?
No. What is this all about? What is it you want?
You know, Kirk. I want all information pertaining to the project. Technorama.
Technorama? What is that?
Don't play games with me, Kirk.
Give me a moment to have my crew pull up this information. Our computers are smashed.
I give you 3 seconds.
Spock, you got it?
Yes, sir.
Kirk, time's up.
Okay, Khan. Here it comes. Now, Mr. Sulu.
Welcome, loyal and new listeners alike, to Technorama. If you're joining us for the first time, you found the place where tech, science, and sci-fi are fun. This is show number 72 for January 5th, 2006. The geek panel for the show is made up of me, Chuck Tomasi, and the man with the talent, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Wow, you're generous tonight.
Hey, after that opener, that was the talent.
Hey. I'm going to PayPal you that $5 here, Chuck. Thanks.
Don't forget the Amazon tip jar on the cover page.
Yeah.
Coming up tonight's show, you take a look at the $1 million homepage. You know, some people have seen this before. I haven't, so it was fun. Mm-hmm. We also have Craig had fun with his laptop today.
Loads.
Poor guy.
Fun.
And, of course, part two of our Steve Wozniak interview coming up after On This Day in Tech History. Are you ready?
Let's do it, man.
I'm ready.
One more day out of 2006. I'm looking for 2007 already.
What? We'll be right back. On this day in tech history for January 5th, 2006. This is January 5th, it's the fifth day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 360 days remaining in the year. It was on this date in 1854, the San Francisco steamer sinks and 300 people lose their lives. An Austrian newspaper reports that Wilhelm Röntgen discovered a type of radiation later known as X-rays on this date in 1896. And in 1914, the Ford Motor Company announces an 8-hour workday and minimum wage of $5 for a day's labor. Construction of the Golden Gate Bridge begins on this date in 1933. FM radio is demonstrated to the FCC for the first time on this date in 1940. And in 1944, the Daily Mail becomes the first transoceanic newspaper. Warner Brothers shows the first color newsreel on this date in 1948. The Tournament of Roses Parade and the Rose Bowl. Mr. Ed debuts on television on this date in 1961. And President Richard Nixon orders the development of the space shuttle program on this date in 1972. In 1980, Hewlett-Packard announces the release of its first personal computer. Richard Stallman starts developing GNU on this date in 1984. And in 2006, yes, that's today, the expected activation of the Sober Worm. Happy birthday goes out on this date in 1865 to Julio Garavito Armero, the Colombian astronomer. And born on this date in 1914, George Reeves, the actor who played Superman in the old black and whites. And finally, happy birthday to Arthur H. Robinson, the Canadian-born American cartographer, born on this date in 1915. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for January 5th, 2006.
This is Kevin Rose from Dignation, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig of Technorama.
How about them apples?
Yeah.
Hey, real quick into the listener feedback. We've got feedback from Kevin Devon. We were talking about the SSIDs on your new network router.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
He said the best SSID that I have ever seen was when he was war driving around and came across one that said, "Get off my lawn." Space is omitted, of course.
That is awesome. I wish I had thought of that one.
I like that.
Actually beats my Fortress of Solitude, man.
Of course, in mine, I'd have to say, you know, get off my snow.
You're snow. Yeah, I'm a train.
We've got a voicemail from K.O. Wright also.
Uh-oh.
This is a response to the... I said her friend Kelly had a podcast. I stand corrected.
Mm-hmm. Hello, Chuck. It's Cal from Hawaii. Just to correct you on that, he doesn't do real, Kelly doesn't really do a podcast, it's a radio show, but he's going to do it for, he's going to set up an archive for that show anyway, for Northern Lights, and the way to pronounce his last name, it's almost like saying California, but it's really Sapergia, Sapergia. All right, see you later, thanks for playing the sound, bye.
Sapergia, California, I got that.
I could see those two going together.
And we've been... Oh, hang on. I've got an incoming call.
Okay.
Chuck, you got another phone call.
Who is it?
Bruce Barr.
OnStar?
Bruce Barr.
Juice Barr?
Bruce Barr.
I don't know what you're trying to tell me. Have him leave a message.
Hey, Chuck, Greg, I think you know who this is. Okay, you got to keep in mind, you know, there are people who are driving cars or maybe operating, you know, heavy machinery or even drinking a glass of water like I was and almost choked to death. Any chance to get rid of old technology, you're all for it. This from the man who's 4 feet away from a K-Pro 4.
Right here, buddy. Yep, right next to it.
Anyway, hey, don't get me wrong on the work slate. I own 2 Model 100s, and I know exactly where they are in the house. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bruce, I have to make a slight correction. I didn't quantify that quite right. Any chance for somebody to give me money for my old stuff, I'll take it. Craig is paying for the mixer. If somebody gave me $500 on eBay for that work slate, out of here, buddy.
You have it so packed up yesterday. It would be instead of overnight, it'd be yesterday delivery.
But if I nearly made you spit water out, it's a good podcast.
I guess just don't do it on the iPod.
All right, we have no follow-ups from last time. We've got a few voicemail, but right into the news. The new mixer is in. You are hearing this on the new mixer, so I'll apologize right now if the levels are off a little bit. Craig is real happy with the audio on his end, less hiss on the loopback.
I don't know what was so different between that one and this one.
But yeah, not bad. When you... There was a...
Are you done? I kept getting the static on my back, coming back to me, like I had a bad connection, you know, on a phone or something. It's like, but I heard that for like the whole 2 hours or whatever we're on the Skype or whatever. So I was like, it's so much cleaner. I can't believe it. So, yes, it's definitely worth it.
And Lance Heath is doing a contest for his show number 100. Or did he say it starts on show number 100?
Are we eligible?
I don't see why not. I'm not family. I don't know the answers.
Sure, we're family.
Well, we're friends in tech. Yeah, F is for friends. It doesn't stand for family. It doesn't stand for familiar. It doesn't stand for...
Dial F for family.
It doesn't stand for fornication. Friends in tech.
This show is G-rated.
No, thank you. You found that faster than I did. Where are my promos? For some reason, I didn't get that into the playlist in the right spot, so I'm digging around here in real time. There it is. Here, we'll let him tell you all about it.
Hey there, everyone. It's Lance Heath. You know, the digital man. Okay, maybe you haven't heard about me. My name is Lance Heath, and I host the Digital Experience Podcast. I'm starting a celebration of 1 year podcasting and 100 shows. Now, granted, the 1 year anniversary was in November, but the 100th show is coming up very soon. Did you want an iPod Nano for Christmas but didn't get one? Well, now's your chance. Head on over to www.digitalexperiencepodcast.com and find out about the contest. I'm giving away an iPod Nano, a new PED stand from ThoughtOut.biz, and a couple of cases from OtterBox.com, the shock and water-resistant protective case for, well, almost anything. Stop by the site and make sure to listen starting with show 100, which is the start of the contest. So come on by and subscribe to the Digital Experience Podcast only at www.digitalexperiencepodcast.com.
All right, Lance.
Lance, the digital man.
Now, you found an article on Slashdot from my neighborhood.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't get the memo. Wisconsin now requires, by law, open source voting. What it looks like.
Explain that a bit.
Well, from what we can gather, and I haven't done all my detailed facts on this or so far, but I threw it in there because the Wisconsin link there. But what they're doing is the governor signed legislation that will require the software of touchscreen voting machines used in elections to be open source. Municipalities that use the electronic voting machines are responsible for providing to the public on request the code used. I say you ask for it, Chuck.
I could do that.
Once you put in the first request.
What I want to know is, do you have to, are they going to have a hard copy strip printer on there or something?
Well, as far as I can tell, that's part of the whole thing is they require a paper trail.
Okay, so when you pull the lever or whatever and it gets sent electronically, you also get one of these.
Yeah. What is that, a Radio Shack printer there?
I think it was an Epson MX-80.
No, I think it sounded more like an Okidata 360.
Don't challenge me.
I'll school you, boy. Anyway, so I mean, you know what? When they keep talking about this electronic voting, even if they do it for federal or whatever, I think that there's no way you can just not get around having a paper trail.
Oh, I think you have to. I mean, there has to be an audit trail. I mean, look what Sarbanes-Oxley has done to our poor lives. Everything's got to have an audit trail.
Yeah, so why not? I mean, I can see it. I think electronic voting would be great. You know, they can tally things. But if there's ever a question, you're going to have paper somewhere.
Okie doke. Hey, I
thought that was cool that they required open source and not have to worry about a die bolt crap.
Or they could have gone with Windows.
Well, no, you know, die bolt has been having so many problems. Was that in Florida, wasn't it, just recently, or someplace, die bolt got reamed.
Somebody was mentioning yesterday that, you know, they noticed all the spammers are coming from Florida. If you trace back the IP numbers and things, they're all coming from Florida. I said, yeah, they're probably using hacked voting machines.
Yeah, it's a worm sitting on there spewing spam off a voting machine. Oh, God. Anyway.
Well, I put this in the strange story category. This was, it's a link to the $1 million homepage. Not that it costs $1 million, but this kid was sitting around. Some of you may have heard this. It's been around the internet for a while, but you know, I'm a little slow on some of these things. The spam takes a while to get to me. The $1 million homepage is this guy figuring out how he was going to pay for college. And he was sitting around and said, why don't I make a grid and sell pixels on that grid to the people. So if you wanted a 16 by 16 pixel, you know, you'd pay, slow math here, 256?
Well, you have to buy them in chunks.
Yeah, you can buy them in chunks.
But I think it's like, I don't know, you have to buy a chunk, and I can't remember the lowest common denominator.
They're practically all sold, but he was selling them a buck a cell on this grid. So for a dollar, you could buy, you know, people were buying 10 by 10s, you'd pay $100, and you'd have real estate on this page. So if you go to themilliondollarhomepage.com, you can see, I mean, it looks like a really bad subway bulletin board.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things that are not quite family safe on there. Not explicit, but just things, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what's kind of cool is you can hover over with the mouse and you can see
where they link to.
The small ones. Yeah, even the small ones, see where they link to. But hey, I'm going to tell you what, kudos to him. I think it's a great idea.
Oh, very creative.
Yes, very creative. And he pulled it off. So, I mean, he's like right at the $1 million mark now.
I'm going to undersell him, though. I'm going to come up with a 99-cent homepage.
Oh, you better register that.
I will only get $900,990 million.
Either it's already taken or you better register it before the show airs.
All right. I see a familiar face walking into the studio. It looks like Mr. Wozniak's rejoining us.
Okay.
How's that?
Sounds great.
Come on in, Steve. Sit down.
Parker.
Do you listen to any podcasts?
I subscribe to some podcasts, and I really don't have the time to listen. I also don't have the time to browse the web ever. So I get so much email. I get so much email that the number of links I click on to a day pretty much takes me to at least a subset of the internet world, a pretty complete subset as far as tech news articles in particular, as far as other types of news articles, as far as jokes and humor. I run a joke line on the internet. So I get submissions from all over the country, all over the world, and send them out to hundreds of people. One of my favorite tricks is I wrote a little thing kind of like, a mail merge type program for my email program. I scripted it to where I can send to 300 people on my joke list individualized mails where anywhere within the mail I can stick in their first name, their city, their email address, whatever I want. So every once in a while I play tricks on them and let them think that they're getting super personalized mail, that I really care about each one of them individually. More than anyone else in the world.
Look at how we go from woes.
or I'll send a set of blonde jokes, and they'll start to notice their town in one of the jokes and their last name in one of the jokes. That one turns it over on me. But I started this when I came across a site where you would type in something like steve.youaremyfriend.com. And this site just gave all these luscious comments to use Steve. But you see, the name that it used was part of the URL that mm-hmm. you submitted. So that was where I had to find a way to personalize my email so that everyone got it to their first name. And they all thought that I loved them so individually. So one guy wrote back and he said, well, if I'm that close a friend to you, why didn't you respond to my pitch, you know, for something or other?
Yeah. Must have got caught by the spam filter.
Hold on. Let me send you another email.
So what is your opinion of the RIAA and the MPAA and what they're doing right now?
Well, nobody's ever had any good respect for them. None of us like normal people in technology. Of course, we don't work close to them, their companies, to be able to comment on the good side and the righteous side of what they do. They don't really have to. Actually, looking back, to be really honest, it seemed like they were just out to stop anybody who was passing on a song to a friend, to a good friend, to a relative. I mean, it used to be you had a CD and you would play it for your kid, or you might loan it to a friend even. You mm-hmm. might play it for a friend. And boy, it came email. It was so easy to do that sort of thing. Hey, listen to this and send a little song along. And they treated it like this is lost revenues for us. Well, I think it really was. I think it truly was lost revenues. And that, every college kid had 50,000 songs and, you know, never had to buy them and all that. But I don't think the lost revenues were that great that it was worth setting themselves up as some kind of big brother. Thank God that Apple found the formula. Honest people, if they can buy mm-hmm. something easily at the right price, Here we have the internet, the easiest way to publish something, the easiest way to get access to information in the world, and it took 10 years for the music companies to really make their music available on the web. I couldn't sit down and say, right now, in 30 seconds, I want to buy this song, and I'll pay whatever it costs. Give me a worthwhile price. Mm-hmm. And now with Apple Store, really, they hit the right formula, the right DRM, and the right, you know, decent, you know, good quality music selection from the start. You know, it was just like DVDs. They started out and they had a lot of the good popular movies right away. Laserdiscs didn't and faltered because of it.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of, I think that honest people really, it's just make it available at a reasonable price. I'd rather pay the price, and maybe some people will say, you know, heck, I'm just a, you know, I think there's some adults that are just bad, nasty people that have, you know, tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, and they'll still grab stuff for free just because somebody showed them how to. And that's sad because I see a lot of adult friends that will do things like, you know, take DirecTV satellite for free because they can.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, there's just a point that, no, that's not really right, and it's not really the sort of moral values we should be passing on to our children to have a better world. I mean, we want every generation to somehow make the world better, right?
Right.
That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you think the iTunes variable pricing is the right thing to do?
Absolutely. I was driving along one day, and I was thinking, you know, hey, you know what? You get used to one thing that works, and you sort of think, it works. Why would you want to change it? Well, you know what? Some songs are worth more than others. We all know that. And when I was young, I would buy a single at the store for what? I don't know, 25 cents, 50 cents? That must be, you know, $5 today.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, and any album that you buy for $10, there's only a couple of songs you're going to really like hugely, two or three usually. So you're willing to spend that much money for just a few songs. And that's their value. And besides which, I am now into the point where I like to buy esoteric kind of folkish or country songs or singer-songwriter stuff. I'd love to buy my stuff for 50 cents and let you pay $2 for the, for you know, the hot, yeah, the, let the kids pay $2 for the hot stuff.
Yeah. Because I'd rather, they were talking about just what you just said, charging less for the older music. I was like, yeah, that's fine with me. I don't think there's anything I really cared for in the last 10 years.
Well, but actually, just out of fairness, yeah, you can't say every song really would have an equal price. I don't think all CDs, when you go to a record store, had the same price.
No.
I think they tried to some extent, but that was really just for efficiency and simplicity of the accounting systems and all.
What are your feelings about BitTorrent?
I don't use BitTorrent, and I never used Napster. And one of the things is because of my position in life and in society, and I have a voice that's heard a lot, I want to be able to criticize the music industry about some things. I want to be able to criticize them, but I want to be squeaky clean, the cleanest person that ever existed. If I buy a piece of shareware, I usually give the guy, you know, I might buy 10 copies, even if I want it for one computer, or 5 copies, even if I only use it on 2 computers or so. Just to be over the bar clean on everything. I'll even go down to the store and buy real expensive software, hundreds of dollars, you know, software, and I'll buy 4 copies for 4 computers in my house. I always wanted to be the absolute cleanest person, so I didn't use those programs. However, I did feel very upset that I was unable to, some old music, to find it anywhere on the web, that I could buy a CD, that I could buy a song, just some old song that I remembered from the past, and I could get it on Napster. And I would think that after you search the internet for 3 hours in your bedroom, that you got a right to just get it any which way you can. There's another concept which I hold, you know, dear to my thought of what is legitimate. It's almost like saying what is American, because it keeps changing. But it's that if, you know, courts have ruled sort of in the past with the Betamax case and the like, that if you see something, if something reaches your senses, you see it or you hear it, you have a right to record it for personal use. You always had the right to record radio shows. They would play the top 500 songs every year, and I'd sit up there for days recording all of them, and I had a right to do that because I heard it, and I'm only keeping it for personal use. I'm not making money off of it. Well, what if something played on the radio, and I heard it one day, but I didn't happen to have a recorder going? Do I have a right to a memorialized copy that someone else recorded? Can I go on to Napster and ask them for it? Let's say that it's something that a radio station played but is not sold. You know, some songs are just distributed as promos that way.
Right,
and that's
right.
Another case. That's another case where I thought, you know, something like Napster, just there, you know, there's some areas in there that are just sort of right. It solves it, you know, it fulfills a need.
Oh yeah, but, well, I've discovered a lot of new music that way. You know, go, and I have turned around and purchased, you know, what I cared for. In the early days, I don't really download as much as I had, you know, did at first. But I would check stuff out and go, "Oh, that was cool," and end up purchasing something legitimately.
Yeah, I don't think I would ever get something if I were going to do that kind of thing. That I would really get something for free, intending to buy it and not buy it. You know, mm-hmm. It's just that's just me personally, though. I can't mm-hmm. speak for people that are in a much different category. Like, you know, my kids went away to college, and I saw them and other college kids, and pretty much what they did and what they just took is natural, must be right. And what you see everyone doing always must be right. You know, it's the lack of responsibility, dilution of responsibility. When you have large numbers, like a million people doing something, your responsibility is diluted by to one in a million.
Mm-hmm.
It's a psychology principle of behavior, what's what you consider right and wrong.
In a recent interview, you mentioned that as software grows, so do the problems, and sometimes third-party solutions were a better option. How would you compare the support of small companies to large, or the third-party companies?
I don't know. A lot of the, like, I don't know third-party companies, but I don't really go to support that much. I think it's just my personality. I don't want to. If I can't solve it, I almost don't want to call them and ask for help. Because we've all had so much, it is so much trouble sitting there trying to get, you know, winding up getting no answers or for something that maybe I don't need that badly. I have two choices. Call for support or just skip that program. You know what? There's hundreds of programs I like to use, so maybe I don't need that one app. Or I can find one similar to it. I got something on my computer. But having to deal with the hassles, I mean, I just think of when my computer had problems, calling even Apple, and the number of times sitting on the line and being told to do the most ridiculous things that I'm well beyond knowing that I've already done those things or they aren't going to make any sense, restarting your computer, the reinstall system, all this. You know, there's certain kinds of things going wrong that it's just painful. It's painful to go through that kind of support, so I give up on trying to get support other ways. I do once in a while, though, with shareware, I wind up with email. They notice my name, and they start emailing me, and yeah, I get great support. And I suspect that everyone does.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd hate to be the tech that actually got your call. We're like, oh, man, I got to get this right.
No. Even when I called into Apple, it would be some little company they hired out in some other state now, of course, some other country, and they wouldn't recognize my name ever.
Wow.
That wouldn't even matter. Wouldn't even help. I could call people in the company and sometimes get that or get some help. But, you know, by then I had another computer. And very often I knew I had a bad piece of hardware. I'd have two computers side by side and transfer, you know, the same software, the same disk into the second mm-hmm. computer, and it runs fine. It's a hardware problem. And they were just – hardware problems are the hardest things to ever get fixed because everyone assumes, oh, there's software. Fix this. You can do this easily. Why don't you change this? Reinstall that. Throw out these files.
Oh, yeah.
Try to clean up some corrupted files. Run a clean system. Boot up on an external disk. Everything in the world to try to assumes it's a software problem at first. And I hate that because I have been in situations enough times where I knew I'd proven that it was a hardware problem. But, mm-hmm. boy, it takes forever.
I like that. There's a new network of podcasters, FIT, the Friends in Tech. Sounds like they got something cool going on there.
This is Angelo Tomasi. My cousin Guido tells me that he has kids to go to Podcast Alley and vote for Georgia Technorama, and you still haven't done that. I'm disappointed. Very disappointed. I think now would be a good time.
Hey
Hey, that interview with Steve, it kind of livened up from the first one. The second one, a little better. And the third one, you know, he takes a while to warm up, but once he gets going, he does all right.
Oh, yeah. He's cool, though. Hey, I'm telling you, it was just too cool to be able to talk to.
And if you like that, you're going to love our next interview, which we're not going to release in the show like this. We're going to the new format where it'll come down the feed like, say, Monday or Tuesday or Friday or something. I'm going to work on getting it edited up. We talked to, this is official now, we talked to Kevin Rose about Digg.com. I know we've got a few new listeners from the Steve Wozniak article that got digged. And we talked to Kevin because we had a few questions floating around in the Friends in Tech forums and mail lists and things. And I said, you know, my philosophy is, rather than speculate, get the answers from the source. So I scheduled something up, and we talked to him. So I'm going to get that edited and to you as quickly as humanly possible. So Kevin Rose is our next interview. You're going to love it.
Yeah, we'll have some highlights in the show, and then we'll have the whole thing.
I also want to give a shout-out to the chat room. What do we have in there? We had Chad Davis before. We've got, of course, Mark Shepard watching over things. Mad Marv is on his way home. He left. Yeah. Prior to the show starting, he said, I'm on my way home. It takes about an hour. He's in Hawaii.
Okay, we'll wait.
So he left work, and he's on his way. We've got Tim Elliott and Craig's friend Mike Hyatt and Lance Heath, the digital man from the Digital Experience Podcast.
He's digitizing as we speak.
And that crazy name I can't pronounce anymore, but said that they almost ran their truck off the road when I tried to say Zadum, whatever it was. Try to stay on the road this time, will you? Drive safe. Buckle up. All right, we have a What the Chuck. This is number 8 in our series.
What the Chuck?
What's up with that?
This is number 8 in How to Destroy the Earth. I'm slowly counting down to number 1. Number 8. The Earth gets...
7 before we get there.
Stringing it out, all right?
Sorry, dude.
I'm making a thread through these shows. It's like watching Star Trek or BSG. You know, there's a storyline.
Okay.
All right. Number 8. Whatever. The Earth gets sucked into a microscopic black hole. Laugh if you will. This is possible. I will read on. What you will need? A microscopic black hole, of course. Note that black holes are not eternal. They evaporate due to Hawking radiation. Is that kind of like... that kind of Hawking radiation?
No, it's more like, hello, Chuck. Is it Stephen Hawking?
I've got a lot of Stephen Hawking jokes, but I'm going to leave them alone for now.
Yes.
For your average black hole, this takes an unimaginable amount of time. But for really small ones, it could happen almost instantaneously, as evaporation time is dependent on mass. Therefore, your microscopic black hole must have greater than a certain threshold mass, roughly equal to the mass of Mount Everest. Okay? I think you can... Creating the microscopic black hole is tricky, since one needs a reasonable amount of neutronium. Got any lying around, Craig?
I think I got some in the closet here.
It may be possible to achieve by jamming large numbers of atomic nuclei together until they stick. I leave that exercise to the listener. Figure out how to stick atomic nuclei together.
Okay.
All right, here's the method. Simply place your black hole on the surface of the Earth and wait. Black holes are of such high density that they pass through ordinary matter like a stone through the air. The black hole will plummet through the ground, eating its way to the center of the Earth and all the way through to the other side. Then it will oscillate back over and over like a matter-absorbing pendulum. I wonder how fast that would go. Eventually,
listen to this, not fast enough.
Eventually, it will come to rest at the core, having absorbed enough matter to slow it down. Then you just need to wait while it sits and consumes matter, and the whole Earth is gone. This is highly, highly unlikely, but not impossible. I feel as we count down to number 1, these are becoming more and more possible. Mm-hmm. The Earth's final resting place? A singularity of almost zero size, which will then proceed to happily orbit the sun as normal. I think it'll work. I just need some neutronium.
What are we doing tonight, Pinky? I'm
destroying the world as always.
The same thing we do every night, buddy.
Oh, that's what it was. I screwed up.
I take over the world.
Are you ready for your rant?
Yes, I am.
Wait a minute. We got to stick in a promo real quick here.
Wait.
What? Not yet. Just hold your horses.
Take your Gmail account to the next level with the Gmail Podcast. The Gmail Podcast will make you more proficient and teach you features about Gmail you may not have known. In just a few minutes, you'll learn tips and tricks that'll help you stay organized using Gmail. If you don't yet have a Gmail account, log on right now to chuckchat.com and let us know. We'll be happy to send you an invite. Get the most out of your Gmail account with the Gmail Podcast, available at chuckchat.com. You've got Gmail.
All right, I had to throw that in. Yes, that's my other podcast. One of my others, just for the fun of it. Shameless plug. Hey, it's the ChuckChat.com network. I can do whatever I want.
No. Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
What makes you angry, Craig?
When my frickin' hard drive takes a nosedive unexpectedly.
He who laughs last makes backups.
Yeah. Well, that's another story. Anyway, what happened to me this morning? I came in, had my coffee, had my McDonald's, sat down, was going to check my email, and I fired up the browser. And as that was coming up, I went over to another machine through the KVM, checked my work email, came back, and it's like, didn't I just fire up the browser? I clicked on it again, no go. I clicked on Thunderbird, no, nothing. I went to shut down. I noticed that some of my services were hanging. Like MySQL and stuff like that. I've been, you know, running Ubuntu on my notebook. Well, I just held the power button down, did a, you know, made it, I forced it to shut down as it was trying, hanging, of course. Well, turn it back on. Yes, that was it. So, it told me to FSCK my drive, and I already felt FSCK'd. Anyway, so
if you're playing the drinking game, now's the time.
Yeah, whoever's, how many times I drink SAFSCK. Anyway, I let it repair all of the errors, and it did all that, rebooted, Grub was gone. I was like, this isn't good.
Ooh.
So I was kind of stuck. I went and downloaded Nopix. Of course, my burner is on this laptop, so I can't burn it. So I went to go ask somebody. I went to go ask somebody else around the corner and to burn it for me. And as soon as they copied it to their computer, a VMware server went down. I was like, so I got put on the back burner. So I sat
when
around.
When it rains, it pours.
Oh, man. I sat around most of the day with a project I'm working on this laptop. I couldn't get to the files. However, long story short, I got Nopix, was able to talk to the hard drive. Had to find the directory under all the lost and found folders,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Enormous numbers. Found it, was able to get what I needed off, and
you lucked out.
Well, you know what's funny? The hard drive made no noise or nothing. I was just like, yeah, all of a sudden, so there you go. That's what I get. I bet you, can you guess how many backups I got in my program now?
Lots.
Yeah, not enough. That's the correct answer, Chuck.
It's kind of like when you know, you discover your web server's down or something. You're going, I gotta fix this, and then you gotta take your kid to the hospital. Like, I already have a hot priority to work with.
Will you stop bleeding? Hold on.
Walk it off.
hustle. Two laps.
Good. All right, that brings us to the end of the show. We're going to head out of here. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, if you haven't subscribed, if you're listening to this for the first time and you just clicked on a simple icon on the website, consider subscribing.
Sorry. Hey, you know, if this is your first time, we're sorry. No, try us again next week.
Don't apologize. Never apologize. I can apologize for the mixer, you know, I mean, although we'll see how it sounds.
Yeah, I'm not apologizing for Chuck.
Please.
Anyway, here you go. Here's my listener line. Here you go. Call the listener line 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. You can email Chuck at chuck@chuckchat.com and send audio comments to chuckchat@gmail.com. You can email me at kreg@chuckchat.com. And be sure to visit our website, chuckchat.com, for forums, swag, webcam, mailing list, links, show notes, and much more.
Have we done any parting words of wisdom lately? No, back up your hard drive.
Yeah. You can never have enough backups.
Want to thank everybody for listening. Hope you enjoy Technorama once again. Join us. We have a few interesting things coming up in the future. We're going to be doing a live show a week from Saturday. Until then, binary high five.
101, y'all.